is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with co-host Paul Wearson and Cece Iverson.
Hello, Cece. How are you?
I'm doing great. This day is our monthly Story County report from Leanne Hatter. Leanne?
Good morning. The Board of Supervisors, Story County, did hold a special meeting with extensive public input about CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. The supervisors did pass a resolution asking the Iowa State Legislature and the Governor of Iowa to review and update the Master Matrix scoring system for these confinements and to impose a moratorium on the expansion of existing sites or the building of any new sites until what is called the Master Matrix, which is how we review CAFOs, is rewritten and complete. Some citizens, however, are a little bit confused on how the resolution impacts livestock producers in Story County right now. There is no change for producers in Story County. Operators of existing sites may still file applications with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources for expanding their facilities and buildings building new confinement sites. The resolution is a request for action for those in the state government, and those are the only ones that can impose changes. If you do have any questions, of course, call any members of the Story County Board of Supervisors at area code 515-382-7200. I'm going to get this one out of the way. Property taxes are still due. This is your reminder. They're due by March 31st. There are three ways to pay them. You can go to the treasurer's office any weekday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and pay by check, cash, or credit card. And I do want to share, the lines there have been extremely long lately. So you might want to look at a couple different options. You can mail them in, but if you mail them in, they need to be postmarked by March 31st, so make sure you get to the post office by March 31st. Or you can pay online by visiting iowatreasurers.org. That's iowatreasurers.org. And then some other news from the treasurer's office in regards to training and development. Our new treasurer, Ted Rasmussen, has a goal to provide Story County residents with the best service possible. In order to do so, the office will be conducting 90 minutes of training and development each month. What this does mean, unfortunately, is that they will have to close the office for that short period of time. The closure dates and times for the next 12 months will always be posted on their website and then on the entrance to the treasurer's office. Also, we'll have more information and communication on this going forward. The first training and development session that the treasurer's office will be closed will be on Tuesday, April 9th from 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. So, watch the county's website for more information. Well, winter is hopefully over, but it definitely, over the past couple weeks, has taken a toll on our county road system, all of our roads, but especially those gravel roads out in unincorporated Story County. Over this past weekend, Story County Secondary Roads had road crews out to open to roads that were closed, address flood damage and frost boils. These poor road conditions are widespread across Story County, and they are continuing to work to repair them for at least one or two more weeks. Many roads are still very soft, so we have to limit work to the mornings when the roads are still frozen from overnight. Once the roads do thaw and heavy equipment is out there, it gets too soft and they do cause more damage. So that's why you don't see them out there later in the day. But they're working as hard as they can, getting the gravel to the sites. And we thank everyone for their patience and understanding. And we do keep those in Weston, Nebraska in our thoughts and what they're dealing with flooding. You can keep up on road closures at a website. It is kind of complicated, and maybe you guys can put it on your website too. But it is iceasb.org/roads/county/story. Mental health services planning meeting was recently held, actually this past Monday. Story County staff members Carla Webb and Deb Schildroth and Supervisor Linda Merkin attended a meeting hosted by Central Iowa Community Services in Nevada. CICS, which is short, is a 11-county mental health and disabilities services region. It works to develop support and services for people with mental health concerns or developmental disabilities. Story County is part of CICS. And the purpose of this meeting was to discuss some new required core services for individuals with mental health and other co-occurring issues, which are referred to as complex needs. Specific services discussed include intensive residential service homes and access centers. We have some requirements that individuals will need to be able to qualify for those services, and we're still determining how those services will be provided. Discussion focused on the best way to ensure individuals will be assessed for both mental and physical health needs and placed in the setting where they have their needs addressed and most likely to succeed. There will be follow-up meetings to further explore the Access Center network concept, define a lead agency's role in coordinating that network, and establish guidelines for that agency to make placement decisions. The meetings are open to the public, and the next meeting will be held on April 1st at 9:30 a.m. in the Story County Administration Building in Nevada. We are still holding public workshops on our new floodplain maps. Our new floodplain maps are being revised by FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency. We've been doing brown bag lunches, where it's just come and go, meet with county staff, talking about floodplain maps. Our last one is next 2 weeks, from 11:30 to 1:30. There is no formal presentation. You can just come and go, like I said. It's held in a public meeting room on the second floor in the administration building in Nevada. And then another open house is being scheduled for March 26th, which is in a week. And I can't believe we're at the end of March already. But that's in regards to our new home business regulations, or amended home business regulations. That will be held from 6 to 7:30 p.m. It was amended in November of 2018, and the amendments support small business growth in Story County, allowing for what's called a minimal easing of the home business permit requirements. What this is an opportunity for folks that have a current home business permit or looking to establish a home business permit, or something in that regard, just maybe curious what's going on with their neighbor across the street. They can come in, meet with county staff, understand the requirements for the minimal easing and the home businesses themselves. The requests for minimal easing are reviewed and approved administratively by Planning and Development Director. There are some time requirements that set forth, but come to the informational session. It will include information on the changes to the ordinance and provide opportunity to just learn more. And then the public, even if you're not involved in a home business, but just generally curious, you're invited to attend too. So my contact information is L Harter, it's LHARTER, at storycountyiowa.gov, and our website is www.storycountyiowa.gov, and you can contact me via email or my phone, 515-382-7247, with any questions on what you've heard or anything else in the future.
Well, this has been a pretty breathtaking report.
Lots of different things to talk about, that's for sure.
Well, now, Leanna, this is Paul here, Paul Wearson. I'm back in the studio after a long absence.
Welcome.
Weather and ugliness and this winter we've had. And look at that note.
I know.
Pay
I started giggling.
You know, I'm glad you were here today, Leanne, because I'd forgotten to pay my taxes. And I have to fly to Atlanta next week, and I would have been gone, and I would have been overdue.
And you would be paying a penalty in that
That's
sense.
Right. So you see, you saved me. I'll give you gas money to get back to Nevada, because you've been so nice to me today.
No, you know what I'll do? I'll put a reminder in my calendar to send you a note in September, too.
Okay.
In March every year.
You know, you have to begin with the assumption that I'm incompetent, which is accurate. You know, are you getting a lot of calls about the roads?
I think the engineers are. I know we're getting messages via social media too, and generally everyone has been pretty understanding. This has been such an unusual year. My mom is 93, and she comes from northern Minnesota. I mean, when I say northern Minnesota, way up there, she's like, "Leanne, I have never seen a winter like this in my life."
Yeah, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah, and it just we definitely did not need that rain last week.
When you said the social media was not, you hadn't gotten too many unpleasant messages, that is Iowa nice.
Yes, it definitely is. I mean, unfortunately, we come to expect it. And our crews are working as many hours as they can, but people understand, too, that they need a break, too. They're doing what they can.
Well, I'm sure we can put that website that you mentioned on our website so that people can have that. Because they need to have a handy way to check in on what current status is on gravel roads. And I really think that we need to be thankful in view of what's happening in Nebraska and western Iowa. And I talked to one dairy farmer. I didn't talk to him. Public radio did. But his whole farm, outbuildings, house, everything is flooded. He's a dairy farmer, lost all this ultra-expensive equipment. Mm-hmm. And homeless people are gathering at churches, and so we have to put everything into context. You know, we're in a situation where it's irritating but not devastating.
Exactly.
And thank you, Leanne. We have a song appropriate for the occasion.
Water mama, 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. But we can make it to the road in a homemade boat, 'cause that's the only thing we got left that'll float. It's already over all the wheat and oats, 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 3 feet high and rising. Well, the hives are gone, I lost my bees. Chickens are sleeping in the willow trees. Cows in water up past her knees. 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 4 feet high and rising. Hey, come look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 5 feet high and rising. Well, the rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. We can't come back till the water goes down. 5 feet high and rising. Well, it's 5 feet high and rising.
Just tuned in. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you just been listening to Johnny Cash with 5 feet high, appropriate for the time. And we just heard from Leanne Harder with her monthly Story County report. At the end of the program, we'll hear about some upcoming events, the Persian New Year celebration, which is being held next Tuesday. Couldn't get something on the Equinox, couldn't get a space, and the Author Cafe on Sunday at the Ames Public Library. But in the second, that's in the second half of the program, so we want to keep you listening. We have special guests coming in to tell about both. But our next guest will be talking about an issue that is of great importance for our future, Iowa's forests. When I read, there was a bill introduced in the Iowa Senate that threatened their future, the forest future, I was alarmed. So I asked our naturalist friends here at KHOY who I should bring in to talk about it. And the answer was emphatically Paul Taki, who is currently Ames City Forester, but was formerly Forestry Bureau Chief at the DNR until a $1.2 million cut in the DNR budget eliminated his department and hence his position. Thus, Paul knows firsthand both the situation of Iowa's forest lands and the damage that can result from legislation that does not value them.
Well, welcome, Paul Taki, one Paul to another.
Thank you.
I just think it's amazing there can be two Pauls in one room in this day and age when everyone's named Caden and things like that. But I'll tell you one thing. You really are going to present a topic that's of great interest to me. Tell us a little bit about Iowa forests. I know that we have a lot of land in Iowa dedicated to farming, and that's been something that's happened over really more than a century.
Yeah, okay. Prior to European settlement, Iowa had about 6.8 to 7 million acres of forest land. And then by 1954, we were down to about 2.5, 2.6 million. And the reason we know those numbers is the U.S. Forest Service started to do a every five-year inventory or survey of how much forest land we had in Iowa. So from 1954, we had about 2.5, 2.6 million acres. And then to 1974, we dropped to 1.6 million acres from the original 7 million. And then we saw something a lot of people maybe wouldn't think of, but from 1974 to 2012, we actually went up from 1.6 million acres to 3.1 million acres.
Is that right?
So we saw an increase.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Iowa has over a billion trees, according to the Forest Service, which a lot of people don't think of. But then what we started to see around 2012, really we started to see it about 2009. It just took a while for the Forest Service data to catch up to what we were seeing. We saw a decline in forest acres. And since 2012, Iowa's lost 110,000 acres of forest land. And according to the Forest Service, 71% of that was conversion from forest land to either cropland or pasture land.
So that's a dramatic change.
Yeah.
And over time, I think I forgot the percentage, but a very high percentage of our land is devoted to agriculture. And I've heard that our state is number one in the nation in terms of land use for agriculture, or you know, developed land versus wild and untouched land.
What you often hear is that Iowa has the most altered landscape, probably of any state in the union.
That's a good way to say it. Altered landscape. Now, tell us about your job here at Ames.
Okay, in Ames, and today I want to make clear I'm speaking as a private citizen, not as the Ames City Forester, My job here in Ames as the city forester is to help manage the city's tree population. That's trees in the city right-of-way, trees in the city parks. And then there's also about 700 acres of woodlands that Ames has that we want to start developing plans on that. So Ames has never had a city forester before, so there's lots of work to catch up on.
Oh, you're the premier first of a kind.
I am the first of a kind, yes.
That makes you George Washington of our forestry. Right? Well, I want to talk to you about some of the legislation that's going on right now. And when we talk about your personal history, you were an employee of DNR. And
yes.
Your whole position was eliminated, so
right. That
probably foresees or preacts a policy change. You know, people are considering what is current legislation. We're talking about Senate Bill 5. What is that, and how is it important? And
what Senate File 5 basically does is eliminates the Forest Reserve from state law. So what Forest Reserve does is it allows a landowner with at least 2 contiguous acres of forest land to enroll in Forest Reserve with the county assessor's office, and in exchange for agreeing to not graze their forest land, to maintain 200 trees per acre, that landowner can receive a property tax credit. So they, in essence, will pay no property taxes on their forest land. And the original Forest Reserve Law was enacted in 1906, particularly to solve the big problems of that time, which was a lot of ag clearing or forest clearing. So if you read the original intent of the legislators, it was for watershed protection, erosion control, and wildlife habitat. So they enacted the law then to help incentivize landowners to protect the forest resource and not clear it.
And so this bill here, what does that do?
Well, what Senate File 5 would do is you would no longer, as a forest landowner, have the property tax credit. And so then you would begin paying taxes on your forest land. And what happened about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, forest land started to be assessed basically based on the corn suitability rating. So if you had 100 acres of forest land in northeast Iowa on a Fayette soil, you would pay the same property taxes as somebody who had 100 acres of corn ground or bean ground on Fayette soil. And because forest resources, even if a landowner is managing and doing some periodic harvesting, you're not going to receive an income off of that crop every year. In fact, it might be might be once every 20 years or depending on what you were doing as far as managing your tree population. So really there was incentive there for landowners, A, to keep that property in forest land and keep it protected.
So really you're talking about almost total removal of the incentives
for
doing that sort of land management. And I just wonder what organizations or what special interest has brought this to the floor.
Well, that might be a good question for Senator Amy Sinclair, who introduced the bill. But we know if you look at the lobbyist declarations for the bill, you can see that Farm Bureau, they're for the bill. Many of the conservation organization lobbyists have weighed in. They are opposed to the bill. So, and the Association of County Supervisors, their lobbyists has weighed in favor of the bill. So I think where you're getting a lot of the pressure is from county tax assessors in southern Iowa because of the high amount of acres that are in forest reserve there.
Okay.
So, it comes down to rural Iowa counties looking for ways to continue to pay all the expenses of running the county.
And so almost always when you look at legislation, no matter what subject or what area, it's a good idea to follow the money, isn't it?
Right.
Because the motives for any kind of change to something that's existed for a long time usually has some sort of monetary advantage or disadvantage for the people who are advocating for it.
Right.
And you're as a private citizen, your position would be to oppose this bill.
I would be opposed to the bill in its current form because it eliminates forest reserve altogether. It's actually called the forest and fruit tree reserve. So the fruit tree part would stay, but there's not, that's virtually nothing in Iowa in terms of acres. So I would propose, if somebody asked me, I would propose that when we look at the forest reserve bill, we look at what are the biggest problems with our forests today? When the bill was enacted in 1906, it was enacted to solve the problems that legislators and conservationists saw with the forest in 1905-04 clearing. So now the biggest threats we have right now are invasive species. In a recent Forest Service inventory, 95% of the forest plots that they took in Iowa had at least one invasive species. So those are exotic invasives that push out natural vegetation, make it harder to regenerate native trees. So invasive species, big problem. The other problem is a lot of our forests, because of invasive species, in order to take care and steward that resource, you have to do some active management. Because if you don't, those species just keep spreading and keep coming in. And eventually we'll lose a lot of our native vegetation, not just trees, but the forest floor vegetation as well. So the other big component is landowners getting good technical assistance and advice and managing their forests. So if we're going to have a change in the bill or a change in the law, we need to look at what's going on in our forests and construct a law that helps landowners better care for the resource and better steward the resource so that it's there for us and there into the future as well.
So this is something that probably doesn't get a lot of sunlight. The people who are involved with it know a lot about it.
Right.
It's important for farmers and landowners to know what sort of species to encourage and discourage.
Exactly.
Now, I'll tell you about my farm.
Okay? Uh-huh.
I live on a farm, an acreage in Story County near Story City, and I planted a whole bunch of trees in 1985. And before mm-hmm. that, there weren't many trees on our farmstead. And I can tell because the people who shoot aerial pictures and sell them
no longer
come to my door because from the sky, it's all trees and a few roofs. Now, my mixture is silver maple and black walnut.
Okay.
And so that's what I've got there. And I've got a lot of walnuts, but I have a man who harvests those every year.
Uh-huh.
And I know black walnut is a valuable timber, isn't it, in terms of woodworking?
Yes. Black walnut is always highly prized for furniture, for woodworking, for gun stocks. And in fact, log buyers come from all over the world to Iowa mills to purchase Iowa walnut logs, at least the highest quality logs.
Well, I love my walnut trees, and I have a lot of them, so maybe someday I'll harvest some of that. But, you know, I just love what trees give us, shade. They're eating up all that CO2 that we need to have taken out of the air. And I just think that when Iowa has so much, especially in central Iowa, where it's relatively level land, all around me is cropland. Right, I'm an island of trees, you know.
Yeah.
And so when I went to school in Lutheran, Decorah, Iowa, and, of course, a lot of forest up there.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of
dairy farm. I spent some time working up there.
Yes. It's a beautiful part of the country. And there's so many areas where it's not as flat as central Iowa because of what the glaciers did. You know? And so basically you're talking about encouraging people who are in an area where there's a lot of – it's very tempting to plant corn and crops.
Yeah.
And still save something for doing these croplands and natural prairies.
Yes.
And so anything that's a disincentive for that – and if this bill passes, then what kind of effects will you see?
I think what you'll see if the bill passes is A, if you have homeowner or landowners that are maybe on the fringes of metropolitan areas, you know, their taxes are usually higher. You know, Polk County assessed taxes are significantly higher than, say, the taxes in rural counties like Clark County or Appanoose County. So as somebody with forest on the edge of metropolitan areas, you're looking at a huge incentive now to sell to a developer because you have to make some – right now that land's not costing you anything.
So you want to monetize that because your tax incentive has disappeared.
Exactly.
And so this is something that I think a lot of people need to know about because – it's a significant change, and it would be statewide.
Right. And I think the other thing you'll see, too, is a lot more leased hunting because currently under forest reserve law, if woodland owners or participants are following the law, the only income they can receive off that property is something that's the income of something that's a product of the tree. So you could sell logs. You know, if somebody wanted to buy the leaves, you could rake up and sell those. But what you can't do is lease hunt the area because that would be a, sort of a product of the forest, not a product of a tree. And in fact, one of the big complaints from some of the people that are pushing for changes in the forest reserve law is they feel like there's some people that are abusing that by lease hunting. But I think what will happen in reality is now you have to, a lot of landowners feel like they have to make that land generate some income. So now I think you'd see more leased hunting. So that would be less hunting opportunities for local people that live in the area. And also, if the hunting is tighter controlled, you might have lower harvest numbers, and then the deer populations might actually get larger if forest reserve is removed.
So you're talking about this Senate File 5, and
right.
This is currently being debated at the State House?
I think currently, the last I heard, and this was last Friday, I was on a conference call with the Iowa Forestry Advisory Committee, and they think that Senate File 5 is probably not going to move forward in its current form. But in the 18 years that I was in Des Moines, as working as either a forestry supervisor or as a state forester, typically you would see some iteration of a forest reserve bill come out about once every 2 years or so. So even if Senate File 5 in its current form goes away, something else will probably come up either next year or in following years.
Well, we hear about funnel time, and I just wonder if Senate Bill 5 has made the funnel.
Well, because Senate File 5, my understanding is it's in the Ways and Means, and it's a tax bill. So tax bills and bills in Ways and Means are not subject to the funnel. So I wouldn't say that it's 100% dead, but my understanding is that Senator Rosenboom from Mahaska County has indicated that the bill will not move forward in its current form. But they're still trying to figure out something.
But they have to hustle to make the deadline of the end of the session. So you're saying this is very iffy. But for folks who have feelings either way, it's probably time to call your representative or senator.
I would agree wholeheartedly with that. I think it's good to let your voice be known, to talk to your representative, to see who's on the House or Senate Natural Resource Committee, and just give them a call. You'll probably get their staffers, but just let them know, hey, you don't support this, and it, certainly in its current form, and you're looking for solutions, not things that create more problems.
Well, I'll tell you what, Paul, it's been a pleasure to have you here today.
It's great to be here.
You are Ames Public – well, you're the Ames
– Ames City Forester.
Ames City Forester.
And I'm glad to be here.
Paul Taki, another Paul, and I respect anyone named Paul, particularly someone with your knowledge and expertise. Thanks, Paul Taki.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
And Paul mentioned calling your representatives. I think Cece has an announcement of an event that is coming up tomorrow at the State House.
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for listening. On Thursday, March 34, for the Trees and Forest Day at the Capitol. Trees Forever, Iowa Woodland Owners Association, the Iowa Urban Tree Council, the Tree Farm Committee, and others will exhibit and educate, promote the importance of tree to legislators and others. This is a great opportunity to gather your thoughts, read your talking points, and network with other advocates. Breakfast will be served at 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. at room 116. Trees Forever and partners will be displaying trees in the rotunda from 7 a.m. to 1:30 p.m.
There are lots of lobby days, but that sounds like a fun one to go to.
Absolutely.
Yes, that'd be great.
Well, now that since you mentioned tree cities, I just have to brag a little bit about my hometown, Story City. Our Trees Forever program is being recognized as an outstanding community organization in Iowa, and we're going to receive an award from the Iowa Urban Tree Council on April 3rd. Mike Jensen, our mayor, and my classmate in high school is head man for Trees Forever. And now it's about time to do our tree sale this spring. And it's a time to plant trees in the parking in all the city areas. And we're very proud of our Trees Forever. And I'm very proud of my black walnuts and silver maples.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson, Cece Iverson, and I are your hosts for today, and we've just been talking with Paul Taki, Ames City Forester. We're turning now to an international community here in Central Iowa, the Iranian students and scholars at ISU, who will be inviting the community to celebrate them with them for the Persian New Year. I spoke with a couple of those preparing for the celebration.
I am with Fran Amin and Nassim Sabatpour, who are here to tell us about the Persian New Year. And I'll let them introduce themselves.
Okay, my name is Nassim. I'm here, PhD student in computer science, and I'm doing research on database, which is my main field of interest here at Iowa State University.
You were a PhD student. Did you do your undergraduate work here in the U.S. or in Iran? And where?
In University, Islamic Azad University of Tehran, Science and Research Branch.
Tehran home for you?
Yes.
And Fran Amin has lived here. But why don't you tell us a little about yourself also, because you are
a native in Iowa.
How long does it take to become a native in Iowa?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Did you come here as a student?
Yes, I did. I came here as a student, as a graduate student. I had already had my degree in physics from University of Tehran. And I came here and got my master's in biomedical engineering at Iowa State University and stayed. And I have worked many years, Iowa State actually, and also for a private industry. And the last part of my tenure was with the state of Iowa. And I'm retired now. So that tells you how long I've been here.
When is the Persian New Year? What is the date of that?
the moment the sun crosses the equator and equalizes night and day is calculated exactly. And that is the reason we don't have a specific time each year to celebrate. And it's going to be different from year to year. But the fixed thing is that it's in the beginning of the spring.
You need to know a little bit of astronomy to figure this out.
Well, I guess that the Persians were very good astronomers.
They were, actually, yeah. That's true.
What's the relationship between Persia and Iran?
In the Western world, Persia has historically been the common name for Iran. Persia is basically a Latin derivation of Iran. In 1935, Reza Shah, the first king of Pahlavi dynasty, asked for indelegates to use the term Iran, the historical name of the country for the people at that time. Native people used this term in formal correspondence. Since then, in the Western world, the use of word Iran has become more common and popular and also changed the use of the name of Iranian nationality.
Iran actually has always been called Iran. But Westerners decided to call it Persia.
So that's why you have Persian carpets.
Persians, yeah, exactly. But Iran is always, I mean, from ancient times, you know, the Iran plateau has always been called Iran.
So why do you call it the Persian New Year instead of the Iranian New Year?
Well, we do. We kind of interchangeably, you know, use both terms because an American or a European or whatever, if they don't understand Iranian, when you say Persian, they understand better. But for us, it's Iranian New Year, basically.
Why don't we start using it, the name that you call it by? What is the name?
Nowruz.
Nowruz.
Yeah, which means new day.
How old is this holiday?
Goes back to over 3,000 years ago. In Persian mythology, you know, this king, King Jamshid, saved his people after a very, very treacherous and hard winter. And people, you know, were so happy, and they all decided that that day when winter had passed and, you know, the spring actually had arrived, you know, they decided that they're going to celebrate that day, and that would be a new day, basically. So goes back many, many thousands of years. So,
yeah. And is this today associated with any particular religion?
No. Nowadays, it's secular tradition. Yes, we all from different background and ethic, we celebrate this day.
It's an Iranian celebration and holiday. It has nothing to do with any religion, at least now. You know, back then, it started with Zoroastrian.
And do you still have Zoroastrians? Or I think we pronounce it differently, Zoroastrians.
Zoroastrians,
yes.
Yeah.
Because I'm only saying that because our listeners might not understand the word, even though it's the very same word.
Yes, we have Zoroastrian nowadays in Iran, in southern part of Iran. We have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the majority of them, I think it's in, you know, they're in India. A lot of Zoroastrians, pronounce it okay? A lot of them are in India. And there is a population, I have no idea how many of them are still in Iran.
I understand you have Iranian students and scholars?
Yes, here Iranian Students and Scholars Association, it's supposed to be like home for Iranian students here. We have three main festivals, which this one is the biggest one among all. The celebration is on Tuesday, which would be March 26, 2019, and we will gather in the Basketball Hall of Cornerstone Church at 6 p.m. The event will start with dinner, which is Reza's signature kebab, which is very famous here, and also many appetizers, which are very well known between Iranians. We will continue the event at the South Auditorium of the Cornerstone Church from 8 p.m. with several performances, live music, and entertainment. The event will be finished with dance at box until 11 p.m. Yes, and all people here are very welcome to join us.
How can they get tickets?
Okay, there is a ISSA page on Facebook. They can just join the group there and ask for a ticket. And also they can send us an email at issa@iastate.edu.
Okay, we'll try to get that onto our website. Yes. In a clear enough way that people
we
can find it.
We have almost 220 Iranian here as a students, but last year I remember it was near 300 guests we had. So we had many people from
around the state and even out of state that they know about this festivity and this event actually get the ticket, you know, and come here. And I guess I've gone to this event a couple of times, a couple of years. The food is fantastic. And also you experience, you know, some of the rituals that they go through, and they're all there. So it's a very worthwhile experience, I think, if anybody's interested in learning about international cultures.
Well, I think that learning about wonderful international food is always a learning experience.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
And you have musicians, Iranian musicians?
Yes, we have live music. Yes.
Oh, and by the way, there's a fee associated with this. Yeah.
But what do you do besides have a great feast? What are your other traditions?
The first 2 weeks of spring is
the holiday. That isn't the climax, it's the beginning.
It's the beginning, right, yeah.
Everywhere. And we are on KHOI Community Radio for our final segment on the Author Cafe with Carolyn and John Klaus. What are you to the Author Cafe? I see this big stack of Author Cafe posters from past years.
I'm on the Ames Public Library Friends Foundation, and when I came on there, we were looking for fundraisers, and we said, well, you know, I think we need to feature the authors from Ames and Story County and that have an Ames connection. And so we started reaching out, and we always chose two that we hoped they would pair up with each other. And we ended up with sort of a high tea theme. Our past director of the library, Lynn Carey, has an amazing collection of teapots. And so we do sort of what you would call the high tea, and we serve tea, and we have a tower of canapes with...
That's the word. I wonder what those things were, canapes.
And so people can enjoy an afternoon of tea and canapes and listen to our guest authors talk about what they've written, why they like to write. And they interact with each other. And what we have found is they bring out the best of each other. So.
Well, it sounds like a delightful afternoon. And there is, we should make clear that unlike almost all the other events sponsored by the Friends, there is a ticket for the community. And this is a very, very special. I mean, I don't think you could probably get such illustrious guests if this wasn't a special event.
Right. I think that what we've found so far is the authors, when they get an invitation to do this, feel like, thank you. Thank you. I wanted to do that. So I could, a year ago, we had, from the Des Moines Register, we had Kathy Obradovich and Reka Basu that had Ames connections. Kathy's an Ames native. And I could go through our list. Neil Nakadata and Deb Marquardt. We had no idea how complimentary they were, but because of their family immigrating to America and their experience, it was, you know, wow. Wow.
Well, let's hear a little more about what we can expect this coming Sunday. First, what time is it?
It's from 2 to 4 on Sunday in the auditorium at the library. I hate to inform you that it is almost sold out. You know, there may be people at the event hawking their ticket to get a good price for it.
Well, I can just say that it's really quite a unique experience because you have these little towers on every table and people walk around pouring hot water into your tea bags and you have all these yummy little cucumber toasty things and cakes and whatnot in front of you, and it's an experience that you don't find often.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to get to the literary part of this event.
Okay. Then I will shut up.
But so, I was so interested to see this pairing because I remember when Art Cullen was the editor of the Ames Tribune. Now people compare him to Mark Twain, but in those days he looked like a classic, old-fashioned newspaper editor. He always wore white shirts and suspenders and a red tie. He looked like he was carrying on the tradition, and he was only here for a little while, like a year or two. And if you read Storm Lake, you'll hear what he did besides that, which I've in preparation for this, I picked up the book, which was recommended by our New Year's speaker, or I should say guest, mm-hmm. Linda Merkin. She recommended Storm Lake. I've been reading it aloud to my husband.
And I picked it up, and John read it first, and then I'm almost two-thirds of the way through. I hope I get it finished by Sunday. And I think Linda Merkin, in hers, reflected to the Leopold book, the
Tenth County Almanac.
There we go. And he picked up the 1800s, and it's sort of like Cullen has picked up from the 1900s on how agriculture in Iowa and soil conservation has evolved, and talks a lot about immigration and those types of things. So he left Ames and has just continued his passion of writing and received a Pulitzer Prize. And that was the issue with the Pulitzer Prize was...
Well, it was discontent with the way in which agribusiness interests were keeping secrets about their plans and not sharing the information that Cullen thought should be provided by county officials with respect to agribusiness operations in various locations. It was sort of an expose of concealing information, and he had to diligently make freedom of information requests and dig it out.
Now, it's a very interesting phenomenon because, of course, the Storm Lake Times is not only owner-published, but they actually print it themselves. They have the old presses. And
I think they've evolved into another place, but they did for most of their history.
Well, at the time that he won the Pulitzer, that was what was online.
Right,
so
that was online.
I'm sort of dated in my...
It's okay. It's not that dated. So.
But I think this kind of phenomenal sort of muckraking journalism is possible because he was really independent. That is something that when you're owned by Gatehouse Media or even Gannett, you have trouble doing.
Well, we'll have an opportunity to compare and contrast because we have editors of two newspapers. And Storm Lake Times is not the only newspaper published in Storm Lake. So he doesn't mention too much about the other paper in his book, but we'll have a chance to ask questions about his relationship with the other paper in town.
Now, that would be very interesting.
Right. So there's all kinds of questions that can come up in these events, and that's part of the attraction, I think.
And we've lost competitive local papers.
Oh, yes.
That used to be a very fun to get two papers and compare the two of them in Des Moines and in regions. So, that brings us to Michael Crum, our local editor of the Ames paper, which is owned by Gatehouse. So, but he's an extremely good writer. When he decides, you know, when he writes a column in the paper, and just so it'll be fun for them to hear how they go back and forth and why they do what they do.
Yeah, well, it will be very interesting from the newspaper business aspect because I've thought about that a lot here on KHOI because, of course, Gatehouse Media also publishes the local papers of the that we cover. Mm-hmm. And they share, you know, they share reporters, they share stories, which really helps these little papers stay alive. But it also means that they are working on very, very short staff. Mm-hmm. So interesting things that we're going to get to hear about, those of us who are fortunate enough to go on Sunday.
I think it'll be interesting to me just to contrast the journalist experience of these two editors. Michael worked for 10 years as an AP reporter out of Des Moines. He's worked for the Hawkeye in Burlington and as a reporter here in Ames. And you have a chance to go online and see the body of work of Michael. And he's written a lot of interesting things on a lot of interesting topics. So compare and contrast, like the examination question. It should be interesting.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Carolyn and John Klaus. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson, C.C. Iverson, and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Paul Talkey, Fran Amin, Nassim Sabatupour, and Carolyn and John Klaus.
Now, you can listen to today's Local Talk Show or any of our past Local Talk Shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. And
Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin Al-Kathari. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was traditional Iranian New Year's music and 5 Feet High and Rising by Johnny Cash.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
KHOI is provided in part by the Iowa State Center, presenting the San Francisco Symphony, March 29th, 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.